This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first official EFL podcast of 2021 with me, Mark Clement. And what a strange old year it's been so far. And we've only been going a few days. Pink lines at Preston. More double-footed penalty controversy. Managerial comings and goings aplenty. And sadly, COVID. Wherever you are in the country and indeed the world, whatever circumstances you find yourself in, as we all dig in for another bout of lockdown, we'll keep going and try and bring you all the best stories from the world's original league competition. As I'm afraid I'm going to say most weeks for the foreseeable future, all information was up to date at the time of recording. It's the official EFL podcast. And what a great story to kick off our first official EFL podcast of 2021. He's actually only been a professional footballer for just over 3 years. In fact, he was 23 when he signed for Portsmouth, having made his name in the non-leagues after leaving Barnet with Hayes and Yedding, Boreham Wood, Hitchin Town, St Albans City, Farnborough, Hemel Hempstead and finally Hampton and Richmond. And even last season wasn't a totally smooth ride for Jamal Lowes. He was part of the Wigan Athletic team, relegated after the club went into administration. But he's making up for lost time now with 8 goals so far this season, including 6 in 6 games for currently second place Swansea City. And you're getting the opposition goalkeeper in trouble with his supporters. Just tell us, remind us what you did last weekend when you bagged the first of your brace against Watford, please.
So, obviously, in the changing room before the game, a few of the boys are talking about Ben Foster's YouTube channel. And obviously, I've heard about it before, but I haven't watched any videos. But some of the boys watch it religiously. Do you know what I mean? Say it's a good laugh and whatnot. So I said, if I score today, I'm going to try and make it onto the next YouTube video, one way or another. And then, thankfully, I scored. And I was still in the right headspace to remember. And just ran straight over to it. And he's kept it in. I've watched the video, and he's kept it in there. So fair play to him.
Yeah, so he has a little GoPro running throughout an entire game in the back of his... in the back of his net, which it strikes me as strange in the first place, Jamal, because if he has a particularly good game, all the viewers are going to get to see anyway is his backside, because he'll have his back to the camera all
there
the time.
Go.
So
there
I mean, I'm glad you made good use of it, but he got into a little bit of trouble because he noted what you were doing and gave a little wry smile and somebody turned it into a gif and all the rest of it. So
yeah, but what can he do, eh? I've seen an interview saying when they win, all the fans love it. And obviously when you lose, they're going to hate it, so it's one of them. You can't really win.
You can't. You're winning at the moment, though, and you're in the... Well, go on, can you describe... I mean, I gave you sort of story, I hope reasonably accurately, to where we are now. Can you describe how it feels now to be at this moment, bearing in mind the graft you've had to put to get there, Jamal?
It's just... it feels good, obviously. It's a blessing, really, to think where life could have taken me and where thankfully I am now. And obviously there's still so much more to go. I'm far from satisfied with the position I'm in at the minute. I want to keep pushing and keep going as far and as high as physically possible. And this season, obviously, we've started off well. We're in an automatic position, but obviously I think Brentford have got a game in hand or something, so it's nothing to get too carried away with, but we're off to a good start.
But by the same token, it is important, particularly, I suppose, at a time like this as well, to just celebrate those small victories, to just give yourself that little boost. And by goodness me, you've had to keep going. What did keep you going when you were going around that big array of non-league teams and it wasn't quite clicking for you in the pro game?
It's just the self-belief, really. I knew that I was good enough to play professionally. At what level, I didn't quite know whether that was going to be League 2 or League 1 or wherever. But I knew that I could have a career in football. And I just wasn't happy with the life I was living, really. I was a full-time PE teacher and I was playing football Tuesday, Thursday nights, which as a kid growing up, wanted to play football every day. That's the last thing you want, just be limited to a Tuesday or Thursday night. Games get cancelled more frequently at that level. Do you know what I mean? So, and then work started to conflict with training. So I started working longer hours, which means some days I couldn't make it to training. And it just wasn't the life that I wanted, really. And I just decided that enough was enough. I've got to make a full push for it.
And that's when you quit being a PE teacher, and 6 months later you get... Well, go on, tell us how the Portsmouth thing came about.
So, yeah, like I said, I quit being a PE teacher, and obviously that was the majority of my income.
Well, hold on, let's just drill down into that, because you're at home now and you've already mentioned family and stuff. So that's a hell of a step for you to take, to put... I mean, what did your missus say? What did mum and dad say?
It was a tough one, obviously. This is before I had kids, though, so I didn't have that much responsibility besides from the phone bill and petrol for the car and insurance. Do you know what I mean? I was still living at home at the time.
Okay.
So it wasn't that massive thing. But at the same time, football money was in non-league. You wasn't making anything. So the full-time job was my earner. And it was just do whatever makes you happy. To be fair, my missus supported me fully. Mum and dad was all happy with me to do it. They knew I wasn't happy in the job that I was in, and they knew football was my only passion, so they supported it all the way.
Did you ever at any point lose faith and think it wasn't going to happen for you?
Yeah, of course. There's a few times where you thought maybe this isn't going to work. You've seen it before. You see players older than you who you think are going to be successful and be in the first team, and then all of a sudden they get released and they end up not playing and end up in that cycle of getting a full-time job and never make it back into the game. So you see it firsthand that some of your mates, they get released and never play football professionally again. So there's plenty of moments where I thought, maybe this isn't going to work, but I think that was the difference. That I just had to keep that self-belief, because deep down I knew that if I just showed what I could do, there was a chance that it could happen.
You see, this is a really important lesson, bearing in mind where we are as a country, as a world at the moment, because there will be people that are going through tough times and need to dig in and have faith. But there was always just something there burning away inside you, something that just kept you never giving up, Jamal?
Yeah, literally, just that. Something that just wouldn't let me quit. Whenever it got tough, I think when it got tough and when things got dirty and when things looked even worse, I think that's when I really just took it to the next level, really. When things get hard, I think that's when I really come out of my shell and start to produce. And that, it was literally sink or swim. I've quit my job now. My job probably wouldn't have taken me back after 6 months out. So it was like, you've got to do this now. I'm spending all the little money that I had saved on a gym membership, which I couldn't really afford at the time, but it was all what I had to do it. Do you know what I mean? I just couldn't live that life for the rest of my life and think, oh, I could have gave it another chance, or I could have done a little bit more.
Now listen, sometimes missing out in the playoffs can create a hangover, but you're arguably a better outfit than they were last season. You'll obviously say yes, because you're playing for them.
Well, I think the disappointment of last season has only motivated and pushed them to do one better. I think when you come so close to something, it'll have a disappoint you so much that you kind of slip away from it and think, oh, that was the chance, we missed it. Or it's going to push you even further to make sure you hit the goal next time. And I think it's done the latter. So I think all the boys are obviously disappointed in what happened last year, but they're all focused and ready to do one better this year.
Yeah. And listen, your body is a temple. You're a fine-tuned athlete. But when it comes around to retiring, mate, you'll never have to buy a drink again in that part of South Wales after the Derby goals, will you? Particularly the second. I mean, of all the, would that be the goal of your career so far? For those that missed it, ran through half the Cardiff team and then outside of the right foot in the back of the net. Is that the one?
I think it's definitely got to be up there, yeah, in a big game like that as well. It just would have, imagine that if it was the full stadium as well, that would have been mental. But it's definitely up there with one of the best goals I've ever scored.
Good. To put the sort of cap on this, the whole country is obviously in lockdown again. Have you ever at any moment over the past year thought, Can you imagine what life would have like if I'd still been a PE teacher trying to juggle looking after the physical well-being of kids, and are we in or aren't we in? Are we? I mean, have you had any thoughts like that about how you'd have coped?
I was talking about that with the missus the other day. Like, well, I'd probably be the one doing like the Zoom online PE classes. Do you know what I mean? Just jumping around,
Joe Wicks,
having the garden. Yeah, that'd be me to the class. Because our little one had a Zoom PE lesson yesterday, and we were saying that would have been me. I'd be on the other side of the screen, dancing around and doing star jumps and whatnot for 30 odd kids on the laptop. And it's just crazy how life has taken me here, when really I could have been on the other side of the screen telling the kids to get up and do some exercise.
I mean, I guess the serious message, actually, just for anybody that has got kids, what, just get them into a habit of doing a little bit of physical stuff every day if they are stuck at home. There's always a solution to find a little routine they can do with whatever space you've got.
There is, Routine is key in it with the kids, really. And exercise for everyone is key. So exercise with your kids, exercise in front of your kids, get your kids into exercise. It's all going to be positive.
And with the overall sort of COVID pandemic that's going on at the moment, I mean, footballers are no different. You've all made sacrifices, albeit it's harder for you because you're kind of trapped into the routine of games and stuff. So you can't even sort of go and stand in the garden and wave at your mum through the window and stuff like that. I mean, it's a tough old world out there at the moment.
Yeah, it's been hard. It's hard. It's obviously hard for everyone, but like I say, it's even... I say not harder, but it's just difficult because, for instance, my mum and dad, my missus' mum and dad all live in London and we're in Wales. So it's not like you can, like you say, pop over and talk through the window or, I don't know, talk through the garden or jump. Do you know what I mean? It's just a completely separated, really. You can have a FaceTime or whatever, but it's just not the same. But I guess the whole world is kind of in the same boat near enough. So... hopefully it's all back to normal soon.
Mate, I absolutely love your story. I love stories like yours. I love what you've achieved so far this season. I'm going to let you go because I can see you while we're doing this and you're on a giant bed and you keep slipping further and further down. And I'm a little bit frightened.
More,
if I keep
relaxed
you any longer, you're going to just chill out and just that head's going to hit the pillow and then you're going to nod off.
See me.
Yeah.
See me till the morning.
Keep up the great work. Lovely to talk to you, Jamal. Thanks for joining us.
Nice one, mate. Cheers.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
So the Sky Bet Championship's at the halfway point. Leagues one and two are a few games behind. And who better to guide us through where we are, how we got here, where we might be heading than the man who helped us kick off the official EFL podcast in September. Sky Sports main EFL presenter, David Prutton. And I'm after a word, a description, a series of sentences to describe the season to date, Prutz.
Wow, and keeping it all very clean with regards to what's going on in the world realm. Of course, I think it's been in turn uplifting, inspiring, astonishing. I think there's been some pleasing normality about it. I think the reassuring side of what we know about football and it being this most basic of pastimes that we love and adore chatting about. And I think what the clubs have managed to pull together, what the leagues have managed to pull together, the way they've managed to kind of soldier on so far. And as any discussion like this, Clem, and I'm sure you're exactly the same as me, that you're very, very wary about how the depths and the importance of football is talked about within the grand scheme of things. You're very good at giving us a very hefty sense of perspective, which I've always loved. We know where it stands on a level of importance, but we're just so thankful that we've been managed to take in so many games, I think.
Mm. And do you think that the sort of wobbles that have been had at the top of all divisions, and actually you could apply this to the bottom as well, where a team like Southend have a wretched start for the first 20 games, then suddenly win 3 out of 4. Ditto at the top of most of the divisions, most of the teams have had a real old wobble in the mix, and some have had one, come back and gone again. Do you think that's COVID related? Do you think it's circumstances related? Or do you think it's just a darned good season where there are no runaway leaders?
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's normally where you look at the championship where that kind of essence of a team being that big fish in a little pond and looking to pull away from the other teams as soon as possible. I think there's been a pleasing sense of a merry-go-round with what we've seen so far. And I think you're right, it echoes its way down the leagues. I mean, kudos to the likes of Lincoln that, again, once again, going great guns and looking for that automatic promotion at the end of this season. Hopefully that will end. Season will end when it's meant to. But I think if you are approaching it as we hopefully try to do from a broadcasting point of view, as neutral and as unbiased as possible, I just think the stories involved in it, I think the themes running through it all and the unpredictability, it's a cliche, isn't it, when we talk about the Championship, of what it offers and what it provides as entertainment. But it's exactly that.
And do you know what? We've just had Jamal Lowe on before you. Mm. And I mean, I guess he's just typical of the way in which the Championship works, that a guy that was a PE teacher gave it up, staked it all, his entire professional career 3.5 years ago, is now one of the most rampant informed strikers across the leagues. And you could, again, there'll be examples right the way down, maybe little stories at a club you and I are not au fait with. I mean, that's one of the true beauties of being a fan or a follower of the EFL.
Of course it is. And I think, especially from Jamal's point of view, I think given how quick that turnaround has been, I'd be so intrigued as you have had the pleasure of doing, picking his brains. Because we read stories all the time, don't we? We read about young footballers not making it, going in different directions. We read about young footballers not making it and going down some quite sticky patches, which if young men are, and women are in that position, we wish them quite obviously all the best when it comes to that type of thing. But to be able to, as you say, kind of go around the houses the long way around to becoming a professional footballer, I think it smacks of a real diligence, a discipline, a commitment. And do you know what else as well is, without getting too kind of airy-fairy about it, it's not giving up on a dream. Not giving up on a dream. That's what a great example to give to the next generation of people coming through. Don't give up on it, because it's never not done until you've really managed to push and go and explore as many avenues as possible.
Yeah, and serious message to anybody listening who's struggling with the current situation, you know, reach out to friends, reach out to family. If you don't have anybody you're close to, reach out to some of the charities that might be able to help. But do keep going. That is the essential essence. Obviously, we've had a lot of games, Prutz, and in the hour leading up to us recording this, it's been officially announced that the PFA are going to fund tests twice a week at all EFL clubs. And actually, the number of games that have been called off as a result of COVID has been announced. It's 52, 6 in the Championship, 34 in League One and 12 in League Two. I mean, football is not immune. It's not a special case. I mean, across the country, I live in London and the rates are something like one person infected in every 30, which is absolutely staggering. And this is proving that football is far from in some tight bubble and immune to all this.
Well, completely. And again, it just goes to show, as you said, about the effectiveness. I mean, to say something is effective is normally seen as a positive, but to talk about a virus that is like frighteningly effective at getting its way between human beings, isn't it? You mentioned about particularly in London, and I spend a lot of my working time backwards and forwards, kind of seeing different parts of the country. I think it's great that this twice a week testing is coming in, because it's, as you say, Premier League footballers and League Two footballers. Yes. There's a lifestyle difference. We all understand that, but there's still young men and women of whatever division, whatever kind of football setup they're playing in, that need to be protected, need to be looked after, and the knock-on effects that comes with that, because we're dealing with human beings, not farm animals here, are we? So, if we do get the chance, as we are doing now, as things once again really do really really tighten up, and we're not saying anything that anybody doesn't know. That something such as football, yes, it means absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things, but for this little portion of time, our responsibility is to try and do as much as we possibly can to bring as much to people that it may help entertain, get through this little sticky period.
With you at the helm, it'll be nothing short of entertaining, young man. I did feel at the weekend we lost several games as a result of the weather, and I particularly felt for Accrington Stanley, who hadn't played since the 19th of December. Wow. Had missed games in the run-up to that, and bless them, their pitch is frozen. We had the abandonment at Forest Green against Oldham after a 40-minute delay. But I was particularly taken by what happened, the events involving Preston and Forest, not least of which, where the Deepdale linesman got a can of pink paint. Now, in the olden days, they used to just kind of brush the lines so that they were clear with a big, thick green stripe, and the white would do. But
conjures up an image of yesteryear, doesn't it? Of football being played in certain conditions. You had a coloured board that you could actually see. You had, as you say, the touchline suddenly became about a foot wide because you had green either side of it. And they just cracked on. But I mean, unless he's kind of some Banksy-esque graffiti artist that's been secretly mocking up pictures on the side of people's houses around Deepdale. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know whether he had it lying around. He'd done his daughter's bedroom at home and thought, oh, I'll use that up. Or whether he specifically sent somebody off to B&Q and said, I need something that'll be bright fluorescent and it'll catch the eye. And it was down to one individual's interpretation. But to say it was a fluorescent pink bordering on cerise is an understatement.
Maybe the message went, bring me back a can of your favourite coloured spray paint, which probably says more about whoever brought it back than what he asked for in the initial period.
Do you know what? I'm going to make it a quest for producer Dave to get the person on who procured the pink paint on next week's episode of the official EFL podcast. The other part of that game, though, was what on earth is going on? Lewis Grabham, two-footed penalty again. This one was got away with. What's going on? We've had two of those incidents at the Riverside. What's it with players falling over and hitting it off the other foot?
I remember one of the first times it happened, and everyone's kind of looking around going, that doesn't feel right, but have we got something to say to the referee? But now you see it, and everyone's like, whoa, it's obviously two kicks. It obviously can't stand, and they're trying to tell the referee exactly what the rule book is. Again, I mean, an older ex-pro would say, has he checked his football boots? Has he done X, Y, and Z all the time?
Yeah.
But who am I to tell Lewis Grabban about his footwear when it comes to trying to score a goal?
No, quite, but it just feels as though we might have had one of these once a season, every other season. Now suddenly it seems as though we're every week. So there's got to be something in there. Listen, I want to take you on a very quick whistle stop tour across the three divisions. I mean, when you look at the Championship, I mean, we are at the halfway stage, give or take the fact Bournemouth have only played 22, Brentford have only played 22, Watford and Borough as well, and actually a bit further down you got Millwall on 21, etc. But I mean, does the top of the table in particular look reasonably right to you? Is that what you were expecting, are expecting?
I don't think it looks a million miles away from it, really. I think possibly, and forgive me if I'm preempting your next port of call with this, but
you and you only can preempt all my questions.
In fact, anyone else,
I'm going to put the microphone down and you can just talk for the next 25 minutes if you want, because I need to get dinner on.
you're making a Middlesbrough to Jean, we heard. So that's...
yes, indeed.
Not a Palmer, is it?
No. Pies in water. Sorry, I interrupted you. Where were we?
Not at all, my friend, because as you say, you look at it and there's... I would say there's nobody there. And this is me not belittling how tough it is to actually be top of the league halfway through the season. And there's no one there that's, you kind of think, ooh, that's a little bit surprising. Maybe a Reading, only purely because of what we've seen for the last couple of seasons, but I haven't seen what they've been like so far. I think they've done very, very well indeed. I think it's as your eyes get trained down towards perhaps the lower third of the table and some really big names with regards to Forest and Wednesday and Derby. Wednesday, obviously, I mean, it remains to be seen what their next kind of port of call is. But maybe it's because I've got half an inkling about the Forest Derby East Midlands rivalry that you're kind of looking at the gun. There's a lot of things that need to change pretty sharpish, you feel, for those two teams to deem this season something of a success. I presume, I would hate to think that for those two sides that they're now in a position where being in this league next year is deemed a success, because I can't see that for the people involved nor the people that are running those particular football clubs. But
neither should they get cocky, because there is more than a fair chance that one of those big name clubs is going to be relegated at the end of the season, because none of them are showing any real sort of form at the moment. I mean, 22 points from a possible 57 for Chris Hughton, so he's taking just over a third of the points. Maybe they'll creep away. Wayne Rooney's taken 13 from his 27 in sole charge there. I mean, arguably, Sheffield Wednesday have had a surge which was started by Tony Pulis and is being continued under the interim management of Steve Thompson at the moment. 10 points from their last 12.
They've done fantastic well. And I think, having worked with Tomo at both Leeds and Wednesday, the players know what they're going to get with him. And whether Neil Thompson's in charge for the next 2 months, whether he's in charge for the next two games, we just don't know.
I'll tell you who we never seem to get around to talking about, but we should do: Blackburn Rovers, for a couple of reasons. Don't you just love it when a striker is in form like Adam Armstrong, who's now got 16 in the league? Isn't there just something quite joyous about seeing a young fella just enjoying putting the ball in the back of the net?
It's fantastic, because it's one of those things that I quite obviously wasn't that prolific at doing. So when I meet someone that can do it's like when we did the playoff semi-finals last year, we had Ollie Watkins after the game against Swansea at Griffin Park. So again, we're all glad to be back at football matches and all that, and just stood talking to him after the game and looking at one of his goals, and he talked us through it. And he just kind of said it in, well, this is what I did. And I kind of, is that it? And he went, yeah. And nothing else? No. No, that's just kind of was there. Then it was in the goal. And the same with Armstrong. I think he's got a manager who really believes in what he does, regardless of what type of player you are, regardless of what level you play at. To know that a manager gets what you are about, indulges you to the point where you can be the best that you possibly can. And I think there's been an evolution over the last kind of season or so of where he's getting his goals from, of where he's the potency of his attack comes from. And I think what also goes hand in hand with that is playing with a good set of players that know exactly what makes you tick. Because as I said, being a mere foot soldier, dragging that out for the best part of 15 years, you know exactly where the generals are. You know exactly where the lads that have got the sniper rifles that can know exactly what they're doing. So that is how we will be facilitated. And I promise you, that will be the last war analogy I use when it comes to talking about football.
Do you know what? If I had to give an award for, say, EFL manager of, say, the last three seasons, I think I might well give it to Tony Mowbray, because, like, nowhere else, I don't think, anywhere else, has there been such a rapid turnaround of perception.
No, it's been fantastic. I mean, I think having spoken to Tony and had the pleasure of being able to pick his brain, and again, you'll attest to this, Clev, good as gold in and around games. They'll chat to you. There's a very straightforward element. I mean, he's not. He doesn't look at you like you're looking for an angle. He doesn't look at you like you're trying to wring anything out. But, I mean, he's a big bugger as well, so I wouldn't ask him too many things that might get on his nerve. But he's part of a bunch of managers, and I'm sure there's many that spring to your mind right now where you kind of think slow and steady wins the race, really. That they'll be the men and the managers that get 5 or 6 clubs on their CV over the course of hopefully 25, 30 years. They'll just nestle along nicely. Obviously, things are changing slightly with regard to lifespans of managers at football clubs. But I'm talking about the last kind of 15, 20, 25 years. Managers that are in there in the firmament, and they're because they're good at what they do. They don't get carried away with success or failure. And then they make sure that they get good players. And I bet he's sat there kicking back thinking, as long as Armstrong keeps scoring, we've got half a chance here.
Well, I don't know. He's got some other good players as well. Harvey Elliott would be one that he's done a magnificent loan deal. And I tell you what, we should congratulate Bradley Dack as well, because 12 months out with a cruciate injury, got, you know, he's made a few appearances from the bench and got his first goal as well. So good, potent weapon. So listen, Championship clubs are all in the FA Cup round 3 this coming weekend. But I will flag midweek fixtures Tuesday night for Luton against QPR and Bournemouth against Millwall. Are you having to work a few midweeks to cut with some of those rescheduled games? Are you on any of those?
Yes. You've got to take these opportunities when they can, haven't they?
What a bit like I've got to take this opportunity to say those League One fixtures are Friday night. We got Charlton against Aki Stanley making their first appearance since the 19th of December. Early kickoff on Saturday, 12:30 is first against fifth. That's Lincoln against Peterborough. Jimmy Floyd, Hasselbank's first game properly, officially back in charge of Burton, who lost their last five, is at Gillingham. We got Ipswich in seventh against Swindon, second bottom. And, you know, a couple of postponements due to COVID as well. Fleetwood, their trip to Sunderland. Fleetwood, who sacked Joey Barton this week, and Wigan against Hull as well. Jimmy Floyd, Hasselbank's return. I mean, that Ben Robinson, the Burton owner, has got previous, hasn't he? Brought Nigel Clough back after a while. He's done the same with Jimmy Floyd, Hasselbank. But they are struggling, and struggling badly, I'm afraid. Obviously, Jake Buxton dispensed with over the Christmas period.
It's a hell of a job that he's taken on. Having spent time with Jimmy, being able to work with him at close quarters, such a lovely kind of effusive presence, and it really does fly in the face. I think he said in an interview about his kids asked him why he always looks so miserable on a football pitch or angry. And he said, it's because I had to concentrate, kids. I had to make sure that I was better than everyone else. But then you spend time with him, he's such lovely, charming, amenable company, isn't he? So, and again, going back to working on games that he would be involved in, always had time to chat before, always had time to chat post. But I think my initial instinct is, A, it's one hell of a big job that he's got on his hands. And the other side of it is, fair play to you, mate. You know what I mean? It would be very simple, as is always tends to be the cliche when we talk about this, for him to kind of dip his toe in, think, this is what it's like. It's pretty ruthless. It's unforgiving. It's impatient. But I think it quite obviously helps that he's got that existing relationship and is that kind of redder death figure that hopefully comes in and takes over and hopefully helps out. But again, I mean, if you take Jake Buxton as well as an example, I know many former colleagues and ex-teammates that are looking to make their way in the Football League or within the coaching fraternity. It's tough. It's tough. It is very, I think, because he was player manager at first, wasn't he? Then soon realised that, my God, you need, 28 hours a day, 17 days a week to be able to get through the amount of work that you can to get yourself ready for to play on a whatever day a match day is. But it's a tough industry. It's a very, very, very tough industry.
Already 8 points from safety and inherits a team. Quick bit of maths here. Home and away. Who's conceded 50 goals. You could hear the cogs whirring then, couldn't you?
I was going to try and help, but I'm rubbish at maths.
Yeah, no. 27 plus 23. By my reckoning, that's 50 goals conceded in 22 matches. The other departure is Joey Barton from Fleetwood. Won half his games, but only won in his last seven. Fleetwood are currently in 10th, and that would mean that they are only 3 points off the playoff places. Curious?
Very curious. I mean, even more so given what we perceive to be kind of emanating out of Fleetwood and what's gone on there over the past couple of weeks. The fact that you've got perhaps the two protagonists have since moved on, which again, kind of, I mean, is it in need of a fresh start? I think part of his, or the majority of his coaching staff have gone as well. It's a very, very attractive proposition for whoever pitches up next.
Yeah, albeit you've just talked previously about sort of having to manage up. There is a very ambitious owner there who has done remarkably well in his non-football business and has done remarkably well in appointing the right manager to take his club on that next step up and then often makes another change again. So we wish Joey and we wish Fleetwood well. And in League Two, well, Carlisle now lead the way. Port Vale parted company with John Askey after three defeats in four. Paul Hurst has returned to Grimsby Town after Ian Holloway's pre-Christmas departure. And Stevenage won back-to-back games for the first time in 18 months. Let's start with, John Askey, actually, who I still feel very sorry for, having been named as one of the major creditors in the whole sort of Macclesfield demise, because he always strikes me as being one of football's nice guys. And you know, finds himself out of work.
Yeah, it's and again, given the kind of timing of it as well, having spoken to different managers, coaches, players, as you get further down the pyramid, it's as brutal there as anywhere else, if not more, because we're looking, like you say, you've got to run a form there, which is, in essence, a small portion of games. But given where they are in the league, there's that element of thinking whoever comes in next, we need to give them time to be able to make sure that this club is happy, safe, secure, etc. And again, it's really kind of at the thin end of the wedge with regard to what we expect to see from a football manager's tenure. And I think, as you said, given the time that he's had there, given the recent run, given this season, I'm not saying that you should... in this season say that everyone else, there should be no departures, there should be no appointments, because that quite clearly wouldn't be football and it wouldn't reflect what we know this game to have turned into. But again, it just goes to show how kind of fine the margins are between perceived success and perceived failure.
And sometimes the script just writes itself, because if I look at the League Two fixtures this coming weekend, early kickoff, Carlisle, the leaders at home to Leyton Orient, Cambridge now in fifth, entertain Harrogate. We've got Southend, who are bottom, against Barrow in 21st. But in the middle of all those, the 3 o'clock kickoffs, Port Vale actually play Grimsby Town. Have you spoken to our friend Ian Holloway? I confess I haven't over Christmas. Have you had any contact since his departure?
No, I've left him to it. I mean, going in there, it was one hell of a job to start with. And I think typical Ollie Gusto that he went in with him. And like I said, he's a man that lives his life trying to see, hear, feel and kind of emote everything. And I think that's a glorious, glorious way to approach your life. He didn't go to Grimsby, pitch up and say, I'm living here one night a week, the rest of it I'm going to be off and backwards and forwards up and down the country. He went in, didn't he? I mean, from the kind of structure at the top downwards, he went in saying, this is me, you're going to get all of me, you're not getting half of it, you're getting full-blooded, full-blown Ian Holloway at his absolute best. And I think you couldn't fault his approach, his endeavour, his heart at all, could you really? And you never can with Ollie.
No, 100%. And I guess I looked at, right, who's going to come in there when, you know, Ollie had, you know, been proposed for part of the ownership structure, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess you go with Paul Hurst, you go with a safe pair of hands. You go with somebody that showed great resilience and fortitude when he missed out on promotion to the Football League a couple of times with the club previously, and then ultimately delivered it before moving on. You know, better the devil, you know?
Yeah, I think it's very much like that. Maybe echoes of what's going on with Jimmy at Burton Albion. But having spoken to Paul and worked with Paul and seen how he goes about his job, his number two, Chris Doig, is a player and a fella that I came through the youth team with at Nottingham Forest, and I was his lodger.
Of course, the best were part you? Of the season. Were you? Did he have any criticism? Did he give you your bond back when you left, or did he take any debits out for damages?
Oh, and he spent a year hammering me into shape, which is what any good, slightly older pro should do. He's very responsible, is Chris Doig, very kind of mature, and I think I just got in the way and made a mess, which I think has kind of been the remit for the rest of my life, as it's tended to pan.
But
he was, and again, I remember seeing it was good, because obviously as Paul's career's developed and Chris has been his right hand man, I remember seeing him when they were down there, when they were at Ipswich, and it was the international break, and we were chatting away, and there was a game that we were doing, and he was in the stands watching, and he was just kind of not really happy with the approach of some players. And the great thing is with Doig, you can't hide it. And the old adage of, you know, like what most coaches and managers will say, I love football, it's just players that mess it up. Which is exactly the kind of how they found themselves. But I think as an appointment to steer them towards safety, the goodwill obviously of the fans, unfortunately, he'll feel it online, hopefully he'll feel it in the papers. He won't see it actually in the flesh, but hopefully that'll stand him in good stead.
I'm going to finish with a bit of a surprise for you. Well, actually, it's a surprise that I didn't mention this when you came on earlier in the season, but there will be some people out there listening to us. I'm talking just in general life who are in a bit of a sticky situation, maybe a business that is struggling incredibly as a result of circumstances, isolation, all the rest of it. I mean, listen, you've had your highs and lows across your life, professional life. There was one major incident in 2005. I think we both know what we're talking about. the pushing of the referee, Alan Wiley, the 10-match ban, all the rest of it. How did you get yourself out of a pretty dark place and situation? What would your advice be to people who might be struggling at the moment and maybe need a little fill-up as we all contemplate, who knows, 4, 6, 10 weeks of complete lockdown?
It's I was chatting to my daughter today as we went for a walk after she'd finished homeschooling, and we were chatting about that sense of, I mean, we're not, nothing monumental is going to happen before 6 weeks, isn't it? And I kind of said to her that, wow, 6 weeks, we used to look forward to that as a school holiday. And 6 weeks when you're a kid felt like about 6 months, didn't it? You thought, that's amazing, that amount of time we're going to have off. And now it's just in a blink of an eye. It's a portion of time to say, sorry, you can't go near people that you know, love, hold dear and cherish. And we've all just kind of been exposed to that. And that's just the way life is at this moment in time. I think in any walk of life, regardless of what you do, and especially given how it is now in instances and circumstances beyond anything which we would have ever perceived possible, hanging on and hoping that things get better is the only thing that really does get you through. Yes, you need the tangibles as well. You need support. You need to be able to be happy and healthy in whatever position you are. But if you hang on to the things that do make life seem a little bit sunnier, do make life seem a little bit more manageable, then I think that hopefully drags you towards whatever your particular light is, whether that's seeing people again that you know and love, whether that's doing things that are relatively normal that we took for granted, or whether that's just doing daft little things like spending time with people that make you laugh. But I fully understand where I fall into all that and appreciate every single piece of kind of good fortune that's come my way, nor have ever taken any of it for granted, and understand that there is a vast sway, the majority of people that are in truly, truly dark places, and just sincerely hope for people like that they understand that the world is a community and the community needs to look after each other, and somebody somewhere is looking out for them, and hopefully if they hang on to that, that'll get them towards something which feels a little bit more comfortable.
David Prutton, time with you is a joy with a capital J. Great to talk to you, mate.
Clem, it's my pleasure, my friend. And as ever, as we say on the end of all these, stay safe, look after yourself, be good.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to David Prutton and Jamal Lowe. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do please give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Keep going, everybody. See you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.